Welcome to Ripstop on the Record, the podcast for makers, by makers, where we talk about all things MYOG. Brought to you by Ripstop by the Roll.
I think it's good, right?
Yeah, I think that was a good take.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Ripstop on the Record. I'm Jameson. In today's episode, we will be talking with Chris Page. Chris holds quite a lot of titles, the least of which is Kyle's best friend, but also co-owner of Loop Alien, and he does a lot of other stuff around here. We're talking with Chris about quite a few things, honestly. This is a really fun episode where we run the gamut in terms of stories and conversation. Like I mentioned earlier, Chris and Kyle have known each other for a really long time. Actually, they go back to undergrad. So we're going to talk to Chris about what it was like for the early days of Ripstop by the Roll, when Kyle first told him about fabric that he had. But also now, kind of more in the current time, Chris and Kyle co-own Loop Alien together. So that is a hardware company that looks to eliminate knots in the outdoors and make outdoors experience a little bit simpler for people that don't want to memorize all the knots. So today we're going to talk about all sorts of stuff. Early days of Ripstop by the Roll, funny stories. For Chris and Kyle back in the day. We're going to talk about flatware design, 3D printing and MYOG, composites, all sorts of stuff. Chris is a really fascinating guy. He's incredibly smart, and he just has a lot of fun stuff to share about engineering and about designing and even about some other role. So this is a really fun episode. It's fun to sit down with somebody that I hang out with outside of the office quite a bit. It's fun to finally sit down and chat with him. So we'll get to that in just a minute. A few other updates. One, make sure you're always checking out our new products tab. There's always stuff there that we're bringing on. Typically, if we bring on a new product, you'll hear about it from us here, but maybe there's something that you missed. So make sure you go check that out. Our newest product are our print-on-demand 8x8 samples. So if you're looking to get a custom print of any kind, going through a custom design tool, it's been asked that we provide some sort of sample so people can get proofs of their color, print, or pattern that they're putting together. Now, with the 8x8 samples, you can do just that. So for $5, you can get an 8-inch by 8-inch example of what your print, pattern, or image will look like in the final form. There are some limitations, obviously. You're not going to see a repeat pattern or lines in an 8x8, especially if you're looking to get a couple yards. But at least in this case, you can get an idea of the scale, the color, fidelity, anything like that. So check out our print-on-demand samples if you're looking to do a custom print. I do want to give a little bit of a plug to a fabric that I've been using a lot recently. That is EPLX Coyote Tan, Coyote Brown, Coyote Tan. I've kind of made it my all-around fabric, honestly. There's EPX and EPLX, and I just love it. I love how you can tape the back. I think it looks fantastic. I think it wears really well. These are some of the things that I've made with this fabric recently. And yes, Carter and Isaac have teased me enough. I've made a new wallet. I've made like a notebook cover. My current backpack is made out of that fabric, but I've also made ZPPs and all my bike bags, my half frame bag, my rack bag, my burrito bag, and my saddle bag, all Coyote Tan EPLX. It's my go-to fabric. It's also not that expensive, honestly. When you look at some other laminates, this fabric is not going to break the bank. It's easy to pick up a couple yards and make it your go-to fabric as well. I'm really stoked on this wallet. I will probably do a reel on how I made the wallet and what the pattern could look like. If you are interested, then keep an eye on Instagram. We might post a reel for that kind of soon. It's really sleek, really slim design, and using my favorite fabric, which I just told you about. So I'm not going to belabor this anymore. Let's hop into the episode with Chris Page. Well, welcome to the podcast, Chris. How are you today?
I'm good. A little interested to see where this goes. been kind of seeing you guys do these podcasts from a peripheral for a while, and now I'm in the hot seat. So
yeah, you're like longtime observer, first time caller.
Yes, and I've heard stories. I've seen some of the videos. So be interesting.
Do you remember when Kyle first brought up the podcast to you? Did he tell you about like the first episode ever or anything like that?
No, you know, Kyle being Kyle, I never heard it from Kyle. You know?
That's fair.
I heard it from Carter. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I've ever talked to Kyle about the podcast.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. That is kind of funny. That is very Kyle, where he's like, yeah, I did it at work. It's over now. On to the next thing.
Exactly. Yep.
You're on the episode today. We're going to title the episode something like 3D printing and Loop Alien and the amazing Chris or something like that.
Yeah,
but what is your relation to Ripstop by the Roll for anyone curious? How'd you end up here today?
Oh, that's a long story. It goes back to keg parties in college, I suppose. So yeah, Kyle and I were roommates in college, and then we rented a house together through grad school, and then he left to go do his thing at Northrop, and I stayed in Durham because I stayed on for my PhD. And then he got into hammock making and then pivoted to fabric. And it was very peripheral because he was still up in Baltimore. But basically he moved back to Durham and I still lived here before we left to go to San Francisco for a few years, and kind of just saw it from the get-go. It was very weird, right? Because he moved back to Raleigh. I lived in Durham, and I, you know, came down to Raleigh. It's like 30 minutes apart, right? And he took me to the facility, which was a self-storage unit down the street from the apartment he was renting. And it was like something out of like a horror movie, you know, like just a unit and the fabric leaning up against the wall, and he had like a yardstick to measure out fabric. And so, you know, I've seen it from the inception, except for the hiatus where we were on the other coast for 4 years. You know, saw it growing from that to the next time I came back to visit, he was in a like mixed use office building that had some warehouse space and some desk space. And then the next time I came back, he had rented out the one next to it and connected them and had added some printers because now he was doing the outdoor ink stuff. And I think the next time I came back was when you guys had moved to the South Miami location, where now you have a giant laser there and an extra warehouse for storing all the roll. I mean, it's just been crazy to watch. So I've kind of just been around the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your background like? So you said you did your PhD. You and Kyle were engineers or engineer majors at NC State.
Yeah.
And you kept going. What did you study?
So I was I'm mechanical engineering and aerospace engineering, technically, but mostly just making stuff, designing things, mechanical design. You know, as a PhD, you have to do some kind of scientific research. So,
sure.
But I was building micro textile fabrication for carbon nanotube yarn, which I've never
for
used
sure.
since then.
So, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, right. I barely know what it means, but I was able to trick, you know, my committee into thinking I knew what it meant. But it's the kind of the backdrop is just always making stuff.
Sure.
Funny story. So, you know, Kyle was an electrical engineer. And when we got the house that we lived in together, junior and senior year, we wanted to have the ability to play music and music videos on the TV in the living room. But at that point, you didn't have, you know, really Bluetooth wasn't even really a thing.
Music videos.
Yeah. So you had to have a computer to run to play the videos. And we didn't have a computer to sit in the living room. So we had Kyle's computer up in his bedroom. So we decided we were going to run an S video cable from his computer all the way up through the attic and down into the living room, which means we needed to make a custom S video cable, like a 100-foot S video cable, which required some soldering.
Yeah.
So we get to the point where we start soldering the final connector, and Kyle, the electrical engineer, cannot solder. So me, as a maker, because like I grew up soldering stuff, had to take the reins there, and I didn't let him live that down for a while. Yeah. I'm a little
this is
nervous.
Your job.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah, I've just always been a maker, alongside Kyle as the thinker.
Is that a normal? Is that a trend that you see, where like he's kind of the dreamer, and then is that your dynamic between him, like the dreamer and the doer, kind of where he has a lot of ideas and a lot of concepts, then you're like, okay, I can design this, I can 3D print this, and I can fabricate this, so we can make that happen.
Typically, yeah, he would say he's also a bit of a doer as well.
Sure.
But yeah, it's, you know, you phrase it right. He's the dreamer. He's smart enough to know. Like, even when I come up with a concept, he's be like, I don't think that'll work because of this. And then I'll say, oh, yeah, you're right. Like, so yeah. He can still
yeah.
hold his own with understanding the mechanics of the real thing that we're going to build or do. But yeah, typically he's the dreamer and I try and execute.
So I think this is probably a good segue. Speaking of the dreamer and the doer, you all also own a company together.
Yes. Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Right? yeah. So, you know, Kyle was getting hot and heavy with the fabric and expanding into custom printed fabric and cutting fabric, and wanted to expand the portfolio into the hardware components type stuff. And knew that wasn't his forte. And so he reached out to me, and I was still living in California at the time. And yeah, we decided, yeah, let's do a hardware company. He said there was an opportunity in the market for that. And I agreed with him. So we then spent probably 18 months trying to come up with what the brand would be, what the title of the, mm-hmm. the company would be. And, it was failure to launch, so to speak. We still knew we wanted to, but, and then, David Burrell, who owned Loop Alien, he, you know, had a magnificent start with Kickstarter and had it for a few years. He decided, it was a garage business for him.
Sure.
He didn't want to do it anymore. So he actually approached Kyle, because Kyle was buying Loop Alien stuff from David to sell through RBTR as a component, and said, do you want to buy the company? And then Kyle, you know, called me up and we decided, yeah, let's do that. We have a ready to go brand, and we can kind of build from there. And so, yeah, back in 2017, we bought that, and for the first few years, we just kind of let it run mm-hmm. the way it did. We made a few early tweaks, mostly on Kyle's side. He changed some of the website stuff. And then a few years ago, we finally, designed our first original part under the Loop Alien brand. That was the Micro GLT Guideline Tensioner. And that's almost probably our third best product at this point. The original RCA is still the best.
Yeah.
And then we did the, wasn't really a hardware design, but a use of the hardware design. It was the Continuous Ridgeline Kit, which uses the RCAs. Sure. That's actually, I think, now our number one seller.
So on a more simple level, what is it that Loop Alien does for anyone that doesn't know what your company is?
Yeah, sure. Right. So I appreciate going outdoors, but I am not somebody that's going to remember all the different knots that you need to tie for setting up a hammock or, a bear bag and all that stuff. Right. So it can be kind of a barrier to entry to go out, to get outdoors and do these things that you see some of these, more savvy outdoors people do. And so Loop Alien is meant to...
The Isaacs of the world, you mean?
The Isaacs.
It's hard to be Isaac.
Yeah, yes, that guy. The idea is to provide tools, hardware tools, and kits that just make it easier to do that. So you don't have to memorize knots. But at the same time, we don't want to add like a big bulky gear set to your bag.
Sure.
Because then that just makes it harder to get out because you're carrying a bunch of stuff. So that's easy to use, makes it easier to get outdoors, but doesn't sacrifice, weight and size. Right. And we try and make it cool too. Right. So you can make it blocky and it'll still work, but if it's got cool curves and stuff. So that's kind of been the mission.
Yeah.
The whole time.
So, outdoor hardware to make your camping experience simpler and mitigate knots.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. We're anti-knots. Yeah. Very much so.
Okay. So the impetus for this episode initially was to talk about Loop Alien, what you all do. And I want to get there as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm not quite over mentally kind of like this early rips up of the role phase that you got a little bit of a sneak peek into.
Yeah.
Is there a story that's in your head that comes up when you think about like the early fabric days with Kyle and his brother Ryan, where like an early funny story of his fabric stuff, like the storage unit, or did he ever send you a picture of like a stuff sack that he made? He's like, check it out, I'm sewing now. And you're like, what is this, 1964? Like, what's going on?
The self storage unit is probably one of the better ones. I don't have any good meaty ones. I have a couple of anecdotal ones. Like, so for that, like in the self-storage unit, right? So to, I remember going to visit him at his apartment and he's going to show me the unit and show me the process just because we were hanging out. But the unit doesn't have, it has power, but it doesn't have internet.
Okay.
So if you can imagine, the process for fulfilling is you need to get online and you need to print out the packing slips. And then you take those packing slips and you fulfill the order and you pack it all up. Well, so it starts at the apartment where the internet is. So he had to print out the packing slips in his apartment. Then we drive over down the street to the unit and then do the fulfillment, which I just thought was so comedic. It's like no internet in your facility.
Not the most streamlined system.
I mean, he was you know, making it work because it was you know, grassroots, right?
Because Kyle is that's the doer part of Kyle, where he's like, whatever it is, I'll make it happen.
He was willing to sacrifice. So then in the same sentiment, fast forward another year or two, and he had now moved to Durham for personal reasons. He thought Durham was a cooler place to be.
It is. Sorry, Raleigh people.
I visited him, and now he's got this apartment in West Village, which is like a historic Durham building, brick everywhere, and it's got a downstairs basement room, master bedroom. And so he was renting a two-bedroom apartment where you walk in and it's a standard apartment, you know, small kitchen, small bedroom, bathroom that's shared, right? It's the powder room, but also it's the bedroom, it's the bathroom that's meant for the upstairs, the main floor bedroom. Downstairs is the nice big master bedroom with its own bathroom.
Okay.
Not for Kyle. That was the fabric. And the down room was the bathroom.
Oh my gosh. Right? He was doing down in an apartment?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And batting and everything. So that was his facility, was downstairs, right?
Can you imagine the next people to move in? Like, they just keep seeing like feathers come out of the, like literally out of the woodwork and like out of the vents and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, maybe that's what probably the classic Kyle is like. So you gave your master bedroom to RBTR, right,
man?
And he was still, I think at that point he was still doing some engineering work. So this was him like finishing his day job and then coming home and staying up until 2 or 3 in the morning.
Some things don't change.
Fulfillment. Downstairs in his master bedroom, basement, cave, and then going to bed in the like very small, like dorm room size bedroom on the main floor. Yeah.
What was your reaction when Kyle said, "I'm quitting engineering to do some other role"?
You know, you'd think that'd be shock and awe, but it was like, yeah, it makes sense.
I mean, at that point, you're like, you're standing up for 7 hours
on the wall, right?
Yeah, it's fair.
You know. I think he was a little sad to give up, you know, that that kind of mental exercise that, you know, engineering does. And he still talks about it sometimes where he's like, yeah, sometimes I miss that. But he finds other engaging challenges.
Yeah. I've never been an engineer and I never will, but I do know that running a business presents a lot of mental challenges in its own right.
Yeah.
Very, very different, I would imagine, but it's no less of like a cerebral exercise. That's pretty cool. So for people, long time listeners and really, really committed listeners, the only time we've really talked about the Inception story is on episode 1, which I don't exactly know if I would recommend it. If you are in for a good time, you should go listen to episode 1, but it's episode 1. It's pretty rough around the edges. The audio quality is not very good. It's a podcast I think Carter and Kyle really ever did. It's just full of cringy moments and so go check it out if you really are interested. But it's kind of fun to hear this side of the Inception story, Ripstop, from an outsider's perspective. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're a friend, not an outsider, but like, you know, you're not Kyle, and that was Kyle telling his story of how Ripstop the role started. So it's kind of cool to hear this side of it.
It was fun to watch from the arm's length. Yeah.
Was it weird to see your friend start a fabric business? Like, it's very, it is still kind of a, I don't know. You hear people starting like tech things or apps, or there's like, there are some businesses or some ways that people leave their traditional career that makes sense or is very trendy. Fabric's not one of them. Was there any part of you were like, is Fabric really a big deal?
So it was interesting, but not because of the Fabric side. He had brought up this, you know, that he had kind of, I wouldn't say discovered, but discovered is the best word in this situation. You know, that people were buying high-end hammocks. Mm-hmm. And for some reason that like caught his attention. And he's like, I see a business opportunity here, right? And I'll work with my brother. And so, you know, that's an engineer's brain. There's always this kind of like, you're always looking for opportunities, or that's just kind of how your brain works. It's like, oh, that could be a business. It's kind of just how your brain works. So that part didn't surprise me so much, but the fact that he followed through with it. And I mean, I remember we were sitting around playing around a pool, and he's talking about like the research he had done on website development and search engine optimization. I'm like, who are you? You're an engineer. I get it. But like, you're way down the rabbit hole of designing chips, microchips. And now you're talking like you, I was very surprised at how savvy he had gotten very quickly on that side of things. And I was a little bit jealous. I was like, I wish I knew how to do website development to that level. And and that was the beginning of his kind of his business model of like, we're gonna have a really good website presence for selling hammocks, and we're gonna make buying these nice hammocks cool, right? So that's where kind of the pivot is, you know, that it wasn't Fabric at first, but it was still the same backdrop.
Sure.
Right.
Sure. Yeah, that's true. I guess I haven't. Yeah, I didn't really talk about that aspect of it much, like the app, Appalachian Hammock.
Yes.
Business first.
Right.
Ripstop of the Roll came after.
So that was his transition. It was driven by Appalachian Hammock. Mm-hmm. But then when he decided to pivot to the Fabric itself, still the same underlying, right? You know, being good at making it cool and having, you know, a friendly, clear website presence and whatnot.
Yeah. So I got to ask, one of the early things that I still see every so often is the first Ripstop by the Roll logo. Do you remember seeing like the
toilet paper?
Yeah.
I didn't think anything of it.
You're just like, yeah, it's Fabric. It's cool.
Right. Until I didn't think of it as the toilet paper roll until I noticed the logo was changed. I was like, why did you change the logo? And then he said toilet paper. And I was like, oh, I can't unsee it now. I cannot unsee it.
It's like acid toilet paper from outer space or something.
It was. So I didn't see it until he said it. But
yeah,
I get it.
All right. So let's get on to why we're actually here, which is Loop Alien. So we talked about what Loop Alien is, but why did you get involved with a hardware company? Like you enjoy being outdoors, but you're not exact, like you don't typically go wilderness camping with hammock and like intricate ridgeline and tarp systems or whatever.
Yeah.
Why did you care about getting into Loop Alien?
A couple of reasons. So, you know, I think just at baseline, I like opportunities, and Kyle sold it well. He's like, you know, there's a market for this. And, my parents are self-employed, so there's entrepreneur in my blood.
I've worked with your dad. That's definitely true.
Yes. the opportunity to have a small side business that we can call our own and make our own I'll always jump into that, especially if it, you know, the numbers make sense.
Sure.
Right. So it was low risk. And, you know, in my day job at the time, there wasn't a whole lot of design work that I got to do. It was a lot of problem solving engineering. So it just kind of scratched that itch to be able to say we're going to design our own stuff and that I would be able to be that designer.
Yeah.
And come up with concepts together and then try and make them reality.
In your, quote, day job, or at least what your day job has been for a while now, is it you're kind of close to the product, but you're not as hands-on. Was it a nice part of Loop Alien to be extremely hands-on from inception to like fulfillment? Like, is it nice to kind of own the entire process?
Yes. I kind of smirk a little bit because in my prior life, or I mean, I still do that stuff, but I'm far enough away from the end product that I'm handling problems for the engineers that are trying to design the end product, or it's for a lot of it is for internal use only. Stuff that works on the manufacturing line.
Sure.
It's not consumer facing. The smirk is that with consumer products, you have to over design for people misusing it. there are less nice phrases that we use for that,
sure.
But yeah. So it's just, it's a little more challenging. And I enjoy the challenge because, it's just, you have to design to make it super intuitive and super robust, which can sometimes be painful to watch because it's like, oh, look, I can make this thing so small and dainty and nice and light and functional. And then you take that and you say, okay, now I need to make it so that I ensure that it's going to not break when it's misused and that it's going to be intuitive. And poof, now it's four times the size. Or you're like, oh. So
it was so perfect before.
Yeah, right. But that's, you know, that's every consumer product.
Yeah. Yeah. This might be a terrible exercise, but I kind of want to go through your product line a little bit so people can understand what it is. Sure. For anyone that doesn't know what Loop Alien is. A couple things. One, you can shop Loop Alien on ripstopbytheroll.com. Just go to our hardware section or components and then hardware, and you can see all the stuff there. We'll talk about Loop Alien's website and their Instagram handle later, so you can check out more Loop Alien stuff. But I want to give people like a better picture for people listening, and if you're watching, then maybe we'll pop photos up here of like what these things are. Mm-hmm. But let's start with the original products, like the RCA.
Yeah,
this is a three-hole organization thing. It's very small. It's like 1¼ inch by 3/4 inch, something like that.
Yeah, it looks like a little amoeba,
perfect, yeah. A little metal or titanium amoeba looking thing that you can put in line of your ridge line, and it's a way that you can tie it off without using a knot.
That's
right.
Yeah. And this was the inception product.
This was the original one that, okay.
Yeah. So he came up with this. RCA stands for rapid cord attachment.
I didn't know that. Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. The UFA, which is the one that's a similar shape, but has one of the holes is open, is ultra fast attachment.
See, I just thought that was an alien thing, the UFA. Oh, yeah, I was like, I don't know.
So he came up with both of those designs and started a Kickstarter for them, and they were funded, and the rest is history. You're meant to tie one more knot, and that's to tie the rope to the thing, to the RCA or the UFA, and then you can use it to wrap around trees and hook to itself. Mm-hmm. You can put it, like you said, in line, where you thread the cordage through two of the holes, and then you can use it to lock off like a line lock or a line tensioner. There's a couple different ways you can use it. We made a few newer videos a few years back to show those new uses. And then they're also adjustable. Once you tie it off, you can slide it and it relocks. So you can, you know, like, let's say you're suspending your lantern from a tree, and you loop the cordage over a branch, and you lock off the RCA, and then you say, well, I want the lantern to be higher. You can quickly just kind of grab the RCA and pull it down, and it will raise it up and relock.
That is pretty sweet. Cause if you're not, I mean, knots are not that hard and not that crazy, but for the average person, that's not Isaac or just a born Eagle Scout.
Yeah.
If you're going to go out a couple times a year, you're probably not practicing your knots before you go camping. Cause you're just like, okay, I'm lucky to be getting out. This weekend's free. I just want this to be cool. I want this to be easy, but also it is just kind of cool. Like it's nifty to have tools that can do things more simply and more efficiently.
Yeah. It's gadgets, you know?
Yeah.
There's the knots are kind of boring, and you
kind speak for yourself,
you
dude.
Might have to memorize like a dozen knots for different applications. Right. But And the other one the other argument we like to use is that, you know, the knots are, like if you have gloves on, it's harder to tie knots. Yeah. It's especially harder to untie knots. Yeah. And if you tie them poorly and too tight, it's like, you know, you have to use your teeth to untie it. Whereas like with the RCA, it's like boop, boop, it's gone.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, that's true. All right. So RCA, UFA, what's next?
So then I think to kind of tell the story for the catalog the next thing is the continuous ridgeline.
Okay.
So basically we set out and said, one of the things that you typically want to do is set up a tarp, maybe over your hammock or over anything. And one of the techniques is called a continuous ridgeline. So we didn't invent that, mm-hmm. but we wanted to come up with a ready-made product that used Loop Alien stuff for that setup, the continuous ridgeline. So you have your own tarp already, but the first thing you need to do is set up a really tight line mm-hmm. across two trees. So how do you do that easily? Well, for ours, you put a UFA on one end so you can wrap around the tree and lock it off to the tree, and then you pull the rope tight across to the other tree. Mm-hmm. And wrap it around, and now you have an RCA that's in line on the quarter inch that you can line lock to. So that means and line tension to. So that means you can wrap the free end of the cord around the tree, and then you wrap it around the RCA that's on the cordage, and it gives you that pulley so you can pull it real tight, get the line real tight.
So you get a bit more leverage instead of just hand tightening.
Yeah, right. So imagine trying to tie a knot right there.
Yeah.
You're trying to keep everything tight. So it gives you that thing to pull on, and then you just wrap it around two times. It clicks tight, and it locks off. So now you have this nice tight rope across two trees, and then in addition to that, we have the attachment points for your tarp, and those are adjustable too. So you can...
Those are nifty. What are those called?
Those are NAMA claws, and so that's by
yeah.
NAMA, another U.S. company that we partnered with.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are sweet.
Yeah. We started out to try and design something mm-hmm. for that purpose, the attachment, the adjustable yeah. attachment point, but those are just so nifty.
You kind of already do it.
Yeah. So,
yeah. One thing I do want to mention about your products, and I don't know, it's supposed to be a resounding endorsement, which is Carter uses almost all of these things in some variation. I mean, he has like 7 different tarps, so he doesn't use Loop Alien on every single one of them.
Yeah.
But his go-to systems almost always include Loop Alien stuff. And then anyone listening, you know from hearing Carter over and over again that he only picks something when it's the absolute best or when he absolutely loves it.
Yes.
And for these things, he really, really does love these systems, and he's been a part of testing them and designing with you, which we've talked about before, or some of the later ones. But
I'd have to give him credit. He was fundamental in designing that ridgeline kit. Mm. And so for Carter, make sure that everybody knows that line lock technique where you pull it tight and wrap it around, that's the Intimidator method, because he came up with that method for using the RCA, and we went in on it full bore.
What's funny is that he'll never listen to this.
Great. Well then.
We give him credit.
Pull that all back. I don't give him any credit.
Yeah. Okay, so after the Ridgeline, this is your latest product, but it does go along with the Ridgeline kit. You just designed a new piece for the Ridgeline kit.
Oh, the cord winder.
And
yes,
it's not in order.
Yes,
not in right. Actual. No,
that
order,
that makes sense to tell that story. So yeah, you know, I've been wrapping up those continuous Ridgeline kits for years.
Literally, figuratively.
Yes. In my garage, and you know, occasionally when I pull them out and unwind what we send to the customer, I'm like, I don't know how we haven't gotten complaints about this because that Zingit is great cordage,
yeah,
but it tangles so easily,
yeah.
And the experience of opening up our Ridgeline kit out of the Ziploc bag and using it for the first time, it's just I'm still beside myself that I haven't gotten like nasty emails because it's just like, what the F?
This is not acceptable.
So I finally got on to, I'm going to solve this problem. Mm-hmm. And so we designed a 3D printed cord winder that has the ability to, you can stick your tent stake in there, or it even has a little twist knob. That way you can unravel the Ridgeline kit as you're installing it yeah. between the two trees, and it not get tangled. And then when you're ready to break it all back down, you can wind it back up on the thing. It just keeps, it's better manicured. And so that, what we just released that, what, 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. So now all the ridgelines come with that.
Yeah.
Free. And then you can buy it if you want to have other cordage that you want to keep well contained and organized.
Yeah. That seems like one of those things that, maybe ultralighters are like, who cares? I can wrap it around my fingers, but it does make your experience way better. And, yeah,
and it's faster.
It, yeah, that too.
it's literally faster than trying to do. I mean, I've tried the hand.
Yeah, like the pinky thumb overlapping.
Yeah. Right. And it's faster than that.
Yeah.
And it's like three grams or something.
It's sure, it's marginal. Grand. You're not really missing out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So Ridgeline, Nomaclaws, what product is next?
So the next, the one, I can't remember specifically what year it was. It might have been 2021. We did the GLT, guy line tensioner. So this is a way to, you know, the rope that's going from the corners of your tarp mm-hmm. down to your stakes to hold the tarp, you know, out in its upside down V shape.
Yeah.
You want the ability to tension that to the right
Some
amount.
Call it an A-frame.
It's fine. You know, whatever floats your boat. So you want to be able to tension that quickly. And again, like if you have gloves on or whatnot, and then, but you also want to be able to release it quickly and break down your setup. Mm-hmm. So this is the solution for that. But it's, you know, we wanted to make it really functional, really easy to do the locking
yep.
and the release, but keep it really small. And I'll tell you, getting into the topic of design, the number of iterations that we had to do for that piece, because it was so small, right? We can't just like 3D print a prototype, because yeah. then it doesn't function the same way. And even the 3D printers can't handle resolutions that small.
Oh, interesting.
And the way that it slides through the holes yeah. and locks off is so dependent on the finish.
Yeah.
We essentially had to have full production runs done of these pieces, right? I had to get them cut by the company that was going to do the mass production. Yeah. Have them finished the exact same way that a full sure. batch would be done. So we were ordering like, you know, 10 at a time. And these companies, these two are, you know, our partners that do the cutting and finishing. We're just like losing hair over like, you want us to finish. You want us to finish 10 of these? Like your order minimums are usually like 5,000 pieces.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, they were nice. But the number of iterations to get that thing done was just super painful. But we finally got it dialed in. Actually, when we were about to release this thing, I had just sent the PO for like, here's the final design and here's the PO for mm-hmm. it. And then like a day later, we were testing it again. And like the way that the cord like snapped in, which just seemed like it wasn't quite right. And we were worried that we had gotten one fundamental, like the yeah. opening size. And we're talking about like, you know, 1 millimeter opening.
Yeah.
To the point where I like had to email the vendor and say, please pause on cutting this massive, finally, you know, finally gave you this PO for this, you know, full batch. We did some more testing. We felt better that we were okay. But so sensitive to the size and the finish. But anyway, so that finally got released and, you know, we originally sold it as just the hardware itself. But then we decided to, just like with the Ridgeline, take our hardware and make a ready-use kit out of it. So
sure.
then that provides all the cordage that you need, and all the lengths are already cut, and all the knots are already tied for the end pieces and stuff.
The GLT, I think, was the first Loopillion product that I understood immediately. Like, it's so intuitive, and it's very yeah. easy, as long as you know it's for guidelines, which yeah. if you're buying it, you probably... we'll find that out. But like the RCA, the UFA, not to scare anybody off, if you want to watch the video and just understand it first, the GLT, you don't really need to see anything. You're like, this makes perfect sense. And I right. don't have to do my friction hitch now.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So, and that was technically the first one that we designed, right? I'd say I designed, cause I was the one doing all the SolidWorks and
sure.
stuff, but a lot of inputs from other people, Carter and Kyle included, but yeah. that was the first. That was the first hardware under new management.
Yeah, right? That makes sense. Yeah. I just realized, I think there's a new motto for you guys here, Chris. I think it's, we hate friction hitches. Because pretty much everything that you, all those knots that you're eliminating are friction-based knots.
That's fair. Yeah.
Right from the ridge line would be some sort of like friction hitch on like a Clem Heist for people or whatever that goes over, or like an inline. And then on your guy lines, it would be like a trucker's hitch of some sort, you know, or like some sort of like.
Yeah. I mean, we dislike knots enough that I barely even know the names of the knots anymore. I've known them at one point, but yeah. Try and just eliminate those.
Yeah. One thing that's really, really simple and kind of like foolishly simple that I really love though are the shock cord loops that you guys made.
Oh, yeah.
They finished so nicely. But that was a design that Carter showed me. That's also just really wise for tents and tarps to give you a little bit of give.
Oh, it's critical.
Yeah.
Right. If you have gusts of wind, the lines need to have a way of alleviating that quickly.
Because it also, so what this is that where your guy line connects to your tarp. So like where we, most of us, like Carter, Isaac, and I, we have like 1 5-millimeter reflective cord, the UHMWPE poly cord. Those are our guy lines. So we, where the guy line connects to the tarp right at the tie out point, there's this little shock cord loop that you just kind of girth hitch onto the tie out and then girth hitch it or just tie it onto your guy line. And it's just, I don't even know how big they are. They're like 3 inch, 4 inches in diameter.
They're 3 inches in diameter.
Okay. So they're three inch shock cord loop. You could just overhand knot it, but what you guys did is way cooler and way more sleek.
Yeah. I mean, it was really a solution to my own problem because, you know,
we got tired of tying it.
When we came out with the GLT, the way that it needed to work, just the hardware by itself was it needed to be with shock cord. Mm-hmm. And then when we made the kit with shock cord, which meant every kit needed to come with 4 loops. And, we started out with tying shock cord loops. So that meant cutting 11.5-inch loops. So just taking a whole spool.
So the one knot you know is a square knot.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And then I just never loved it because it was still just this like teardrop shaped thing with a knot and clipped ends that were
little ends
were melted, and it was just cumbersome and not very sexy.
Sure.
Right. So we eventually bit the bullet and went down the path of designing a continuous loop, which has that little overmolded piece in there. Yeah. So much cleaner, and I don't have to tie knots anymore, which, like, as you know, no knots.
Yeah. It just looks great.
Yeah.
And it's
till to this day we're the only ones that have that a continuous loop shock cord loop, which is surprising to me.
Yeah. And I would imagine it probably doesn't add that much weight because you're using less cord as well.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely kind of marginal. Mm-hmm. A similarity that I'm noticing, and I noticed that we noticed when we were writing the outline, I can't take credit, is it's all flatware.
Oh yeah,
pretty much. Like most of what you're doing is not like, I don't know the terms, like super three dimensional. Like they're all made roughly like a millimeter thick or so.
Yeah, right.
That are designed kind of in a flat space. How does that affect your design? Did you do that intentionally? Yeah. I'd imagine you did. Why are they that way?
Yeah, this cost. If you look across the industry of other hardware, outdoor hardware makers that are, especially if they're based in the United States, flatware is the only way that's going to be.
Gotcha.
Cost effective. Right. So flatware means that the way that it's made is it's a big sheet of metal and it's either laser cut or water jet cut or CNC routed, but it's fairly simple. It's just following a pattern.
Sure.
Once you go 3D, now you're talking about 3D CNC or 3D lathe, and the price just skyrockets. We would, you know, our RCAs are, what, $6, right? If it had a 3D element to it, it would be easily $20.
Oh, wow.
Right? It's to manufacture in the United States.
Yeah.
Plus, finishing would be harder because if you have 3D faces and stuff, you know, it's harder to get into all those nooks and crannies.
Sure.
So I bet, you know, if your listeners, if you browse any of the other outdoor product companies, you'll probably notice a trend that almost everything's flat.
Yeah.
Unless it has to be three-dimensional. And typically the three-dimensional stuff is manufactured overseas.
We talked about finishing a little bit with the GLT and like the little cord notch that was in there. Mm-hmm. But can you speak to the finishing process and how important it is and things like that? Or give more light around like kind of story around the GLT and finishing flatware?
I can to some degree, but that's part of our secret sauce.
Fair enough.
So we have a special finishing technique that gets us that kind of what we like to call it jewelry finish. Mm. And actually we learned over the years that while that jewelry finish looks great, it actually affects the functionality. Mm. And we've had our finishing partner dial it back a little bit. So there's still some surface roughness, because that's what locks the cord to the hardware.
So what we're talking about, and for people that don't know what we're saying, for the RCA, let's say, that is something that's going to be in line or trying that needs to grip and have some friction with the cord.
Yes.
What you're saying is that if it was super slick, just like pristine, then the cord just wouldn't stay as well.
Right.
So something about your finishing technique, or just any hardware finishing technique, that you want to make sure it is grasping or making a pretty good connection with the cord or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Right. Is that basically it?
Yeah. I mean, you could go down a rabbit hole here, right? Like, there's also like the corner radius of the hardware and then how many turns the cord's going to make. And
yeah.
Does it overlap with itself and
yeah,
part like a pressure point that's over a bend? Because there's been hardware that's been recalled, okay, not from Loop Alien, but
sure,
there have been some tensioners that have had to be recalled because they break the cordage. And we've had, you know, hardware in development for years now that has that same issue that we're still trying to overcome.
So yeah,
there's a lot of variables involved.
Let's talk about materials. I mean, I feel like this is a conversation that's happening in a lot of industries now. Like, I'm big into bikes, so you hear a lot about like carbon fiber and titanium and aluminum, and it's especially a big conversation in the hardware scene. You guys happen to carry just aluminum titanium.
Yeah.
Why is that? What are the pros and cons in hardware specifically?
Right.
For those different materials.
So technically now we have 3D printed plastic with the new cord winder.
Oh yeah.
And it's really, so, you know, aluminum is not going to rust. It's really light. It's strong enough for especially the RCA application. It's actually overkill for the RCA application. Titanium is much more durable. It is heavier. So like I remember somebody emailing and saying, why does the titanium RCA weigh more than the aluminum RCA? It's like, because it's a heavier metal. It's it's more robust.
Yeah.
It's not going to ding or anything.
I honestly didn't really know that, because in the bike world, typically titanium bikes are like the perfect balance between being like one of the lightest and the strongest. Like, they're heavier than carbon fiber, but they're typically lighter than aluminum bikes.
Yeah.
So when you said that, I actually didn't realize that was the case for the hardware.
So this is a hard concept. I'm going to try and explain it really quickly, really easily. And if it doesn't come off, then it doesn't come off. But when you're going to use a nicer metal, a stronger metal, that means you can slash material. You can cut out pieces that aren't necessary. But with the RCA, the size and shape of it is very important to maintain.
Right? There's nothing to slash.
Right. I keep the holes the size they are for the cordage that needs to go through them. I have to keep the outside perimeter shape the same, because that's how the locks functionally work. So the only way I can slash material, if I go from aluminum to titanium, is in how thick I make it. And then as you make it too thin, then it doesn't matter what material you are, it's going to get flimsy.
Yeah.
So there's just not the opportunity to take advantage of the benefits of titanium when you're dealing with flatware.
So at the same mass, titanium weighs more than aluminum.
Yeah.
Some people are like, yes, Jameson, you're, yeah.
A lot.
That's new to me, actually. But that makes a lot of sense. That's helpful.
So then like with composites, this is the whole story behind composite. Well, one of the stories behind composites. To make it easier, just tie it to the Loop Alien materials, like a carbon fiber sheet, a carbon fiber RCA, for example, if that were to exist, would be the strength of titanium, roughly speaking, but the weight of the aluminum, right? Best of both worlds.
Yeah. When's that coming out?
Yeah, right. So carbon fiber is very difficult to manufacture,
yeah.
Especially the flatware approach.
Yeah.
Right? So you can't water jet or laser cut it. It has to be CNC routed, which is expensive.
Expensive material, expensive production method.
Yeah. And then you can't just finish it the way that we finish.
Because
it just shreds apart. Right. So it starts to look a little bit more like the 3D supply chain.
Yeah.
3D CNC. So it's just expensive. And carbon fiber is not really, it's okay to get wet, but it's not meant to get wet and last for a long time.
Okay.
Because water can get in between the layers, especially if there's an exposed edge.
Yeah.
So it's an expensive supply chain.
Interesting. Something you mentioned earlier that I also didn't expect is how you're saying the aluminum RCA is actually really, really overkill.
Yeah.
Is that true for most of your hardware pieces, that like the aluminum, I think a lot of people, which is probably a misconception that we've been sort of taught by the the composite world is the idea that like aluminum is going to be flimsy in some way. Seems like that is probably a misconception that people have grasped onto to be sold to carbon fiber, titanium in some way in their different industries. Cause it seems like most of your stuff is probably just overbuilt, frankly, in a good way, not in an unreasonable way, but it's overbuilt for what you technically need it to do.
Yeah. I mean, if you have to have faith that, the people that have designed different things, with whatever metal they chose, like it's designed with that metal in mind and with the application in mind. So, that's just to say like aluminum is a perfectly good metal.
Yeah.
And a product that's made out of aluminum is going to most likely, unless it's been, you know, poorly designed.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the right amount of aluminum for that application.
Yeah.
If it was carbon fiber, it's going to be a different size and shape, but it's going to be the right amount of carbon fiber for that application. Even if it's the same application.
Sure.
Two different shapes. In the aerospace world, a lot of people think, oh, carbon fiber is the future. But I have colleagues that still work in that space. And the aluminum still is the champion metal in the aerospace world. Once you go carbon fiber, there's so many new variables that take place that they end up having to bulk it up for the different risk factors that sometimes the carbon fiber version of a, let's say, an airplane wing ends up being heavier than the aluminum version. So carbon fiber is, it's all the wow, but it's not necessarily better.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. I hope I'm not the only one making this realization, or else this will make for kind of a lame podcast. But I guess most people, unless you're in that space, just don't think about we're not in those kind of decisions, so we don't think about that. But it is it is fascinating to think about how we're just kind of fed like certain answers, and I'm not making some sort of conspiracy theory statement at all, but like we're kind of fed these answers based on the industry that we're in and how there are very different answers and kind of solutions in different applications. How like, again, most areas, I'm just going to compare it to bikes. That's what I know better. Is like carbon fiber bikes are almost always like the latest or the lightest, most aero kind of like race bike design. And how like if that, you know, if you're going to an airplane, it's not going to be the exact same way just because the application is so different.
Yeah. So, you know, I push you down, I'll bring you back up here. So the true value of carbon, of composites, is in the ability to engineer the material properties in the very specific way that you want to use them, right? So this is called isotropic materials. Aluminum is isotropic. It's the strength that it has is that strength in all directions.
Yep.
Composite, you say, I need in the long direction, I need it to be twice as strong than in the wide direction. Okay, I can give you a recipe for a composite layup for that exact thing.
Yeah.
So now with bikes is a good example where there's a lot of room for material shape and change, right? Like flatware, I have no space to work in. But with a bike, you've got the whole frame can be oval or circular. It could be square if you want.
Because you want flex in some areas, stiffness in other areas. And for an airplane, you kind of just want stiffness, I would imagine.
I just want it to stay in the air. But so with a bike, for example, because I've worked on composite bike projects, the engineers can look at it and find, I need in this very, very, very specific spot, let's say like right at the fork, I need it to be really strong in just this one direction, and the other two I care less about.
Sure.
But then on the same continuous material, like down the fork, let's say, now you say I need it to have really good bending stiffness, and I care less about what I cared about at the top of the fork. You can blend the material properties down, so you can change mid-frame. Just by changing like what layup you do at a given spot.
Yeah.
So you can hyper customize the strength directionality of a product with composite.
For some reason, I just got this picture of like being able to do like a 292 DCF that like blends into a 6.7 or something, or like a tarp
possible.
You could, or not 292. You could do like a 1.0 for like the tie outs, and it just blends into like a 0.6 for like the tarp, so that you have the perfect like sculpting, that would be so sick.
It's definitely possible. It's probably very expensive to get all the fibers fused the right way and whatnot. Sure. But yeah, that's the whole point of composites.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. This has been a fun tangent, but I'm going to steer us back towards a little bit of the topic here.
That's fine, yeah.
So you do a lot of 3D printing. We've talked about 3D printing, how you've prototyped things like that. I'm kind of curious for the MYOGers at home that have 3D printers, now that's becoming so much more accessible to individual people.
Yeah.
How do you see MYOG and 3D printing commingling more in the future as that becomes more accessible for people?
Well, the day job engineer in me is nervous because people 3D printing buckles that are supposed to hold things together or hold stuff above their head, or heaven forbid somebody tries to hang from 3D printing. Don't do that. Don't do that. 3D printing is it's democratizing making of you know, nice looking, finished looking products. But you have to remember that, you know, a finished buckle that's on the market and sold by a reputable company, like a carabiner, for example, mm-hmm. that has gotten very fancy engineering application, you know, disciplines applied to it, right? Stress engineering, high cycle fatigue, low cycle fatigue, you know, oxidation testing. Like, there's a lot that goes into an end-use product. So just be careful with using 3D printed stuff as an end-use tool that has what we call load critical applications, right? Like, you need to be okay with it breaking. If you can't pass that sniff test, like, if this broke, would I be in trouble? Then don't use it, right? But other than that, there's lots of great spots. So, you know, like the cord winder, for example, that we just came out with, yes, it's 3D printed, right? Am I worried that it might break? No, because it's a cord winder.
Right? you shouldn't really be putting that much pressure.
Yeah, right. So it's not load critical. It will certainly hold up for what it's meant to do. If you drove over it, probably wouldn't survive that. But don't drive over it.
Right? Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, I mean, like, the ability to tinker and tinker quickly is what I love about 3D printing, right? Because if you come up with a design and you're like, okay, now I got to go down to my garage and like pull out my jigsaw and trace it. Oh, that sounds terrible. Whereas you can say, okay, I like this design that I've come up with. I'm not sure it's perfect yet, but I'm just going to click print and I'll go to dinner. I'll go to bed, whatever.
Yeah.
Wake up in the morning. It's done. I can test it, see how it wraps around the cord. I can't tell you, man, our bear bag toggle that we came out with a few years ago.
Oh yeah, we didn't mention that product.
That one, well, it's a great product. 97 iterations, 97 3D prints. Print it, wrap the cord around, doesn't quite snap right. So it's great for that.
Yeah.
Where you're trying to come up with a design and you want to just dial it in. 97 was probably a little too much. Probably could have step back and thought a little bit more in between each iteration, but that's kind of the slippery slope. It's like, it's so easy to just print, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. The bear bag toggle is super cool. If anyone knows the PCT bear bag hanging method, you have a stick and a carabiner and you hoist it up and the stick blocks a carabiner so it can hang.
Yeah.
The bear bag toggle replaces the stick, so it remains on your bear line. You don't have to find a stick. You don't have to know what a clove hitch is to tie the clove hitch to the stick.
Yeah.
With all that stuff.
Gloves on in the cold.
Yeah.
It's just a cord wrap with no knots.
Yeah. And
no
then knots. You can just, there's a little notch on the bottom that you can just, when you feed it through, you can just notch it around the toggle. So there's no other, that's the clove hitch replacement part.
And we call it the abductor because it looks like a UFO, like as it floats up towards the carabiner.
That's funny. I actually didn't realize that.
Looks like that's abducting the bear bag.
So. It is a great, that is another one that's really, really easy to use as a simple hardware piece. But not simple because you had 97 iterations, but it's simple for the user to acquire and then put into use immediately.
Exactly. Yeah.
What are some, do you have any like cool ideas of things that you would like to see people mix with like making and 3D printing? Like, would you, the first thing that comes to mind is backpack frames, but I don't think the application would work at all for First of all, most people don't have a 3D printer bed size that you could print a frame on.
Yeah, right.
But what are some of those ideas where, like, you could see people mixing like RBTR fabrics and creations with like 3D printing stuff?
Yeah, it's really kind of the accoutrements, I would say, like, specialized clips for different things that you want to put on your ridgeline under your tarp,
like a little headlight holder or something like
that. Right. So it's really this is what I think the beautiful part is, you just like, if you have your setup and it's, you know, every outdoor person is like their own snowflake, right? There's not one size fits all.
Yeah.
Right. So that means you have your setup and you're just like, man, I have this, I wish there was fill in the blank.
Sure.
That's 3D printing right there. Right.
Yeah.
I would really prefer to have my headlight holder down by my feet for some reason, but there isn't nothing on the market that's meant for that.
Yeah.
3D printed. Adding accessory holders to your bag with clip-on 3D printed clips that you designed. And so, you know, you can even sew them into your kit. You know, that is where I'd like to see people use 3D printing.
You got me thinking now that Carter has a 3D printer here, I feel like I need to sew in something. I don't know what, but I'm going to find an option.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea to try and embed something in the fabric, right?
Yeah.
So one thing that is fun, I've done this in my day job, is embedding magnets in 3D prints.
Oh, yeah.
So what you do is you 3D print. So if people that understand 3D printing, it's a layer by layer process, right? So you, in your design, you leave a cavity, a square cavity or whatever, a circular cavity if you're going to use a round magnet. And then once the printer gets to the last layer of creating that cavity, before it does the next layer that's going to cover that cavity, you put a magnet in. You stop the print, you put the magnet in, and then you say proceed. And then it prints over, and it's completely embedded in the plastic.
That sounds awesome.
Now you can like have magnetic closures,
or
clips, or things that just magnetize to your frame or whatnot. And
that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a good idea. Yeah. I love that. I don't know. I'm trying to think of some application where that'd be really cool, and I don't have one on the top of my mind. But I love, like, one of the projects of mine that totally blew up for some reason, which it was cool, but I didn't. Was involved magnets, and I think there's something about magnets that people love,
the haptic feedback, like clicking.
Yes, it's so satisfying. Yes. But also in certain applications, it's just absolutely the coolest. Like the project I'm talking about is the window covers that I made. That it's mesh, like this. So there's a silipoly outside, and then there's monolite on the inside, so I can roll my windows down in my car.
Yep.
And still have airflow, it seals kind of to the car with the magnets on the outside, so no bugs can fly in.
Yeah, well, that's nice.
And then you can pitch it out like with a stake, or I was gonna do like a ground stake, but nobody wants more guy lines across the ground in a campsite.
Yeah, so you
kick stuff around.
Yeah, right.
So it's like a rod that sticks the awning out, and then it magnets to the car door.
Yeah,
so that way it kind of can pitch out, and you still get airflow.
That's nice. Yeah, and magnets. You know, especially if they're embedded, like they don't, there's fewer moving parts, like you think of a zipper, right? There's all the little zipper pieces, and then those want to corrode and break, and magnets are just simpler.
Yeah. What's next? What do you see like in the outdoor hardware? You know, I guess you're pretty qualified as a hardware company owner and designer. What do you see happening? Like, what's the next hardware piece? What do you think the next like material is? Or what do you see on the horizon for outdoor hardware pieces?
Yeah, you know, I think the easiest answer is I would love for people to tell me, right? Because
it's a cop out, Chris.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's like, you know, it's like designed by committee, right? Like, tell me what your pain points are. That's what I love doing, is solving problems.
Yeah.
If people are just like, man, I wish that this existed, I would say, challenge accepted. Let's go for it.
Is that an open invitation for people to message Loop Alien?
Absolutely. Okay, absolutely. Sweet. You know, if I can find a problem to solve, that's what I love doing.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's, you know, it's just wanting to do more cool things, right? Yeah. Which it's still fun, but I like to be driven by problem solving.
Sure.
And so I don't have any really pressing problems.
Yeah. So you heard it here first. If you have a hardware piece in mind that you'd like Chris to make, get a few of your friends to message him so there's many people interested.
Exactly. Or if you just, you don't have a hardware in mind, but you have a pain point, a problem. Yeah. And you're just like, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah.
Right. That's how my brain works. There's got to be a better way. Much to my wife's chagrin when I'm around the house. There's got to be a better way to like store these pots and pans. And then I end up,
yes,
I 3D printed an entire organizer for the drawer that has the deodorant and toothbrush and floss. Yes. And she's like, do less, please. Just do less.
I love that. Yeah. So we ask everybody kind of the same question. Typically the question we ask is what fabric is missing on the market?
Mm-hmm.
Being the hardware guy, not the textiles guy in this conversation, at least. What hardware piece or material or concept is missing from the market?
Oh, that's a hard one. I don't have an answer for that. Let's see. I mean, composites comes to mind. I think that it's really, flour's great, but it's very limiting. If I could snap my fingers and make 3D manufacturing more cost effective.
Yeah.
I think there would be so much more out there.
Yeah.
In terms of utility.
Maybe that's the answer to both. Maybe that's like the future and what's missing.
Yes.
Is more accessible 3D.
Yes.
Items.
Yeah, like if you could, you know, they do have metal 3D printers, right? Mm-hmm. They're very expensive and they have their own limitations, but
sure.
Right? If we talked about 3D printing kind of democratizing the manufacturing process, right? You can manufacture stuff in your closet.
Sure.
If you could make 3D products that much easier, I think there'd be a renaissance of new gadgets out there.
Yeah. I want to wrap things up with a couple resources for people. For anyone curious and interested in printing stuff, anything like that, we listed three companies here. One, these are all ones that more or less you would endorse, I guess.
Yep.
Send, cut, send. More or less, that's you just submit a file and they can cut it on any material and get it back to you pretty much. Is that what they do?
Yeah, their stick is mostly flat stuff.
Okay.
They will bend the flat stuff, but they don't do 3D CNC stuff.
Cool.
But very cost effective.
Send, cut, send. Zometry. What do they do?
They do the 3D stuff.
Okay.
And it's a pretty beautiful little network they have so that you can actually get fairly cost-effective prototypes made.
Cool.
And quickly.
Zometry is X-O-M-E-T-R-Y. We'll put the links in the description, but in case you're driving and want to just remember it, that's an X instead of a Z there. And then lastly, for materials, acquiring just any kind of plastics and foams or whatever, I guess, McMaster Carr.
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend first starting at Amazon because it's cheaper, but McMaster Carr just has absolutely everything, and their search engine is fantastic. And if you are into 3D modeling, a lot of their parts, I think almost all their parts, you can download the 3D model into your model database so that you can incorporate it into your bigger design, which is really nice. But their stuff is a little pricey.
What's your... for anyone that owns a 3D printer that's listening, what's your like go-to filament? Do you have like a favorite kind or?
Hatchbox is the company that I like. And I toggle between just standard PLA and then tough PLA. I go for more like, I just want to be able to print, right? So if you think about it, like with that question, but with your more classic printer, it'd be like, what kind of toner do you like to use? It's like, I just like to print.
Right? I'd like to not think about the toner.
Yeah, I don't want to change the filament and change it to, I have black filament and almost everything I print is black. Oh, well, I don't really do the color thing.
Yeah.
Carter has this printer here. He's got like four different spools and he changes colors and tries out materials. And I'm just like, do less.
He has four different spools that he typically only uses gray for, by the way.
Yeah, so he's becoming me, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm too lazy to switch.
I need to get him a black filament so we can get more black in here.
Yeah.
Just the grays, I don't know. It doesn't do it for me sometimes.
Right. It's just boring.
Yeah. The glow in the dark was cool. Lastly, let's talk about Loop Alien. So what's your website? How do people find you?
Pretty simple, loopalien.com.
There it is. And Loop Alien on Instagram?
Yes. I would like to be a little more active on Instagram, but, you know, What we'd love to see on the Instagram is people using our stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So if you've got, you know, Loop Alien stuff, or if you're going to pick up some stuff, take a picture of it, because
yeah,
that's what we love to see.
Cool.
I actually get, we talked about this in the kind of in the pre-brief. We have people buy Loop Alien stuff for the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
I had somebody buy, they couldn't tell me, but they're like, we need six of these RCAs urgently for a military deployment. They're like, what? What? What are you using RCAs for?
Tactical tarps now? Like, right.
Exactly. So it's just, I mean, I wish I could see more of what people are using them for.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, our GLT is very purpose designed. The RCA is the opposite. It's meant for so many things. And I've heard firefighters using them for disaster relief. And, wow. But I just, there's so many other places where I was like, I wish I knew what people use these things for.
That's a good question, actually, that we somewhat skipped over, is like what your target demographic for these are. And I think that's fairly obvious, where, like, if you know that Carter uses them, he is kind of the target demographic of an avid outdoorsman that really wants, you know, that loves items and loves gear and loves tech and wants this perfect item for things. But that is good to know, actually, because this is kind of a sales pitch, but I'm sure you all are okay with it. Like, you can pick up an RCA for like $6. Like, it's a pretty low investment. You can test something out and you just have it around. Like, the RCA, you can just kind of keep around, see what works, see what you like about it. You can keep it in your backyard. You can keep it for your camping rig. I think Isaac keeps like two in his truck.
Yeah.
Like, when he's hunting and stuff, just because they're nice to like throw a loop around and hang something up.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that have said that. Like, I'm just picking up some more. I keep them in my toolbox in my garage.
Yeah.
My setup. Yeah. That's definitely a nice aspect. I will say, though, Carter is not our target demographic. I mean, he is part of our demographic, but he's the one that's like, but I'll just tie a knot for that's this fair. Occasionally. Yeah. Our perfect target demographic is the beginner version of Carter. Mm. Really, like, I love being outside.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of anxiety about being able to be competent out there.
Yeah.
I have appreciation for gadgets. That make my life easier.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, he's a little bit too far down the rabbit hole.
He's too advanced. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's a target because he likes
cool stuff.
Know, cool stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a sucker.
Yes. You know? We love that about him because then I get the free stuff that he doesn't want afterwards.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, Chris, this has been really fun.
Yeah,
thank you so much for sitting down with us. We're glad to finally have you on the podcast a couple years later. Yeah. It is weird, though. Normally we're like hanging out in your garage with whiskey glass and we're just like sitting here on a Friday morning. Like,
Bailey's in here. It would have been better, right?
Yeah, this is coconut water. It's getting crazy.
Sure it is.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Totally.
It's been fun.